It's The Record on KUOW. I'm Bill Radke. It's your first big presentation, or you're negotiating a salary for the first time, or you're finally getting promoted. Have you ever felt that maybe you're not qualified for something at work and everybody's eventually going to find out? If you have felt that way, then you've experienced imposter syndrome. The latest episode of KUOW's podcast, Battle Tactics for Your Sexist Workplace, is about imposter syndrome. And host Jeannie Yandel is here with me now. Hi, Jeannie.
Hello.
And I want to ask, by the way, of listeners, right? I thought we could ask listeners, because I think a lot of us have imposter syndrome stories, right?
Yes, yes. Recent research says that 80% of us experience it at some point in our lives. 80% of us.
That's all.
Yes.
So give us a call, will you? And join this discussion. Tell your story, and we're figuring out what to do about it. Our number is 206-543-5869. We're also on Twitter, at KUOW. Again, the phone number, 206-543-5869. So let's lay the groundwork, Jeannie. You remind us, I said a little bit, but tell us more about imposter syndrome.
Yeah, so it's this feeling of basically not being qualified, that you are doing something or about to do something that you are not prepared for, that you're not smart enough for, that you're not qualified for. And moreover, once you start doing the thing, everybody else is going to realize that you do not belong, that you should not be in that position, which is terrifying.
Yes, it is. And relatable. You said, I mean, your podcast is about the sexist workplace, but you talk on the episode about how this is not just something that affects women.
No, not at all. It's we even found a gentleman in England who has written a bunch of poetry about experiencing imposter syndrome, and we featured a little bit in the episode. Mm-hmm. But it is a really, really common occurrence.
Common, but also true that it falls disproportionately on women. True to say?
It is true to say. That's what a lot of the research that we looked at says. There are kind of two ways that it falls on women harder, right? One is it's reinforced more frequently, meaning that, you know, women and particularly women of color don't see leaders like who look like them or, you know, who have similar backstories to them. They're just not put in positions of power as frequently. So there's that kind of reinforcement of like, oh, well, if I'm feeling like this and there's nobody like me out there, well, maybe there's something there, even though that's not necessarily accurate. It's easy to feel that way. But then the consequence piece of it is that women are less likely to sort of go after things if they don't feel qualified. For example, women are less likely to apply for jobs unless they feel they're 100% qualified for those jobs. And the research says that men in general don't have that same issue, which means if fewer women are applying for the job than men, it's easy to see who's going to get the job.
Sure. Negotiating a raise on
exactly.
And on.
Yeah.
Just getting the work done that
just
you want to get done at work.
Yes. You know, raising your hand, high profile stuff. It's just, you know, if you've got that voice in your head saying, oh, you're not ready for this yet, it's easy to listen to that voice.
Can you you start the episode, which I really appreciated, you know, back in your childhood, and there's the sound of a Catholic mass.
Yes.
Do you and listeners can go listen to the latest episode. It's there where you get your podcasts, Battle Tactics for Your Sexist Workplace. Do you have more of a grown-up workplace memory? Maybe it's pretty recent. I don't know. But have you had imposter syndrome in your professional life?
I have had imposter syndrome in my professional life a number of times. And I thought about, I've even had it in my personal life a number of times. Two examples came to mind. I was filling in as a host once here on KUOW, and I had to interview the Indian Bill Gates. And I was like, there is legitimately no way this dude is going to walk into this room and look at me and think this is an interviewer I should take seriously. So I read his entire 450-page book twice. So I felt like I was at minimum a little prepared to have a conversation with him.
Mm-hmm.
That was not necessary. I ended up asking a ton of overly detailed questions.
Mm.
I think the overpreparation did not help me.
Right.
So that's one example. Another example is I was at a parent-teacher conference for my kindergartner recently, and the teacher asked me, well, what would you like to do to ensure your child's academic success? And I was like, I don't know. I just birthed a child and now I'm responsible for that child. I don't have any ideas for this. And I imagined that this teacher would listen to me hem and haw and not have an answer, tell all of the other teachers, tell the principal, and then I would be judged as a really, basically a poor parent. I had this fear for weeks afterwards. My partner had to actually talk me down.
Yeah. We're talking about imposter syndrome, and this is Jeannie Yandel, one of the hosts of the show, the podcast, Battle Tactics for Your Sexist Workplace. And I want to give the phone number again in case you want to join us. We'd like to hear if you have a personal story of feeling, experiencing imposter syndrome, because we're going to talk about what to do about it. Our phone number is 206-543-5869, 206-543-5869. Here's a voicemail we got from a listener named Judith talking about her imposter syndrome experience.
Hi, my name is Judith Tingley, and I live on Bainbridge Island. I am a retired psychologist, and when I finished my PhD, I went into private practice. And early on, a person came in who was delusional. And I said to myself, oh, good golly, this person needs to see a psychologist. Hmm. And then I paused and said, oh, I am one, but I don't feel like one.
Yeah, that's a good recognition.
Yes,
it's you talk in the piece about tactics, right? Mm-hmm. That's your show, Battle Tactics. What are we going to do about it? But before you get to tactics, you kind of have to talk about causes,
right?
And here's someone who's a PhD psychologist, and maybe she's realizing there what, as you say in the episode, what our brains will do to us.
Yes, which. You know, I characterize it a little bit as our brains messing with us.
Yeah.
But I don't know. We talked to a neurologist who says that our brains are essentially prediction machines, and we are all at some point going to be in a circumstance where we don't know what we're doing. And so the sort of bodily responses we have to that, like our palms getting sweaty, our heartbeat going up, all of that stuff, we can associate that with not being prepared. So then every time we have that bodily experience of, you know, our heart rate going up, our palms being sweaty. I felt it when I walked in here. I thought, okay, but the thing that it's not is my body and brain telling me, you are not prepared for this. You are a fraud and you should not do this interview. What my body is doing is preparing me for something. And so if I can retrain my brain to say, you know what, you're preparing yourself for battle. That's what's happening. It's not that you're not ready. It's that you're preparing for something that's important. And there's a difference between those two things. It makes a really big difference. I mean, I can say over the course of my career, I have been able to tell myself, you are feeling sweaty and shaky right now because your body is preparing yourself for what's to come. That's it. It's not because you're not prepared, and it's not because you're not good enough.
Yeah, but we can go to those stories that we've been told and that we've told ourselves for
very
so long.
Very easily.
And interpret it as, I'm flustered, I'm jittery, I'm obviously ill-prepared.
Exactly.
And weak and on.
Exactly. Yeah.
Sometimes, because I have felt imposter syndrome.
I wanted
to ask you
this.
Yeah. I mean, you and I worked on it on this comedy show together, Rewind. I never thought I was funny. I didn't, and I would listen to people. I would believe the people who hated the show because they knew what they were talking about. The people who liked it, I would explain it away as, well, you know, they love public radio, so of course they love anything that comes out of my mouth. Or, well, they love something that Jeannie did. They loved a sketch that you produced that was hilarious, or John Moe wrote something funny, and I'm just barely keeping this thing. You know, eventually I'm going to be found out. You know, I'm just kind of keeping things up in the air. Do you see what I mean? I'm going to keep fooling the crowd.
Nobody can see me. My mouth is hanging open because never in a million years would I have guessed that you felt that way when I worked with you. I look to you as a model for how to keep the work moving and how to keep myself bringing ideas to the table during that time, because I had the least experience of anybody on that team.
Yeah. Well, but to me, I would look at what you were doing and like, thank God for Jeannie and John Moe and Dave Snyder and David Garriman and all our people.
Yes.
But you know what? One thing I did in a way over time was reframe it as, you know what I am good at is getting great people like Jeannie and John and Dave and Ian, you know, that, okay, I'm not the funniest guy, but I think I started to shift to an identity of what I can do well. Is that a useful tactic to kind of sometimes just to be humble? It's okay to be humble.
Oh, yeah.
But figure out, but give yourself some credit.
There are two really good tactics in there. So one is to, you talked about the story we can tell ourselves.
Yeah.
So one story you could tell yourself is you can talk about how you are the hero of your story, right? Like you face trials and tribulations like literally every hero, Spider-Man, Hercules, everybody faces it, right? Wonder Woman, we all have trials and tribulations. But the thing is, what's brave and amazing is we come through it. We keep trying. And that's basically what you were doing in reframing that story.
Mm. Well, thank you, Gene.
Yeah, I have another tactic, but I know there's a phone call.
Yeah, Frank is here from Bainbridge. Frank, what's your story, please, of an imposter syndrome?
This is a really close to my heart kind of tale. I was invited to a very well-known Silicon Valley confab in 2012. Some really powerful Silicon Valley moguls invite 200 deep thinkers. And immediately when I got the invite, I thought, there's no way. Like, I don't fit. Mm. And I'm not a deep thinker and I don't belong. And I'd gone my entire professional career incredibly embarrassed about my education. I actually had left high school. I never went to higher education. And I always dreaded that someday that would be found out. And at this conference, there was a conversation about what our influences were and where we went to school. And it just slipped out that I didn't go. And instead of being completely, you know, humiliated, as I'd always imagined that would go, I got a sort of warm embrace, and I really enjoyed it. And then at the penultimate session of the conference, they asked the new people what was the most important thing they had learned. And I said that I had gone my entire life with this fear, this incredible imposter syndrome, and that I felt really embraced, and I thought it was great. I was embarrassed, and I sat down. And the next person to get up was a really well-known Bollywood actress, and she looked right at me and said, in, you know, an accent I can't do, she said, well, watch this. And she turned to the audience and said, over the last 3 days, these are 200 incredibly smart people, so much smarter than me. She says, over the last 3 days at this conference, how many of you have felt imposter syndrome? And I think maybe 9 out of 10 people raised their hands.
Right.
And I felt, I thought at that moment, I was like, oh my God, I've found my tribe.
It's all of us. Frank, we're just up at the end of this hour. Frank, thanks so much for that phone call.
Thank you so much. What a great story. Fantastic stuff.
What a great topic for battle tactics for your sexist workplace. Final words, Jeannie?
All I want to say, Frank, is you got where you were. And another tactic is you get there. You might not think you're qualified. Okay, great. Earn it in reverse. You're there. Show how amazing you are now, what great ideas you have, and how you can work it, which you totally did. Also, the numbers are on your side.
Yeah, as we found out,
80-90%.
Yes. Jeannie Yandel and Eula Scott-Bino host Battle Tactics for Your Sexist Workplace wherever you get your podcasts. Jeannie, thanks a lot.
Thank you.